The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
We're focusing on the transition away from direct payments this week. We have some updates and plenty of advice.
Lots of actions that you can get paid to do. 102, most of them are for 3 years, and the RPA is in the process of scaling that up and letting more applications through.
And more flooding. Is anything being done to prevent it?
But tell those of us who just lost their businesses, whose homes are now underwater and ruined again, and those whose homes and businesses are now both uninhabitable and uninsurable, tell them that it costs too much to stop them from flooding if it rains again.
We've a preview of a festive favourite, and of course we'll see how the markets and crops are doing.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Well, from freezing to flooding and back again. Don't you just love the British weather? This is the Farming Programme podcast for Sunday the 1st of December 2024. I'm Steve Orchard. Morning. In the news this week, DEFRA has closed applications for capital grants due to what they say is unprecedented demand. These are grants to help farmers meet environmental standards and daily working practices, and we'll talk about that with the CLA in a few minutes. Thieves have stolen more than 100 grand's worth of machinery and equipment from a farm in Selby, North Yorkshire. Police are asking for any sightings or help from the public regarding the theft that took place last Sunday. In particular, if you're offered a red Grimm irrigation pump, red Kvernland Cambridge rollers, Grimm potato ridges or a John Deere weight block, please call PC John Morris at North Yorkshire Police. And in just 2 weeks' time, we'll be able to enjoy one of the great Lincolnshire festive spectacles, the Louth Charity Christmas Tractor Run. Organiser Taran Lee, tell us what we need to know.
So this year, we're starting from the cattle market again. We are departing the cattle market at 4:30 in the afternoon. Tractors are allowed to come in from 1:30. We're also allowing 30 tractors to come in between 1:30 and 2:00 are going to be put into a spectators area in the cattle market. That's one thing that the public always want us to do, was, you know, to let them to come round and walk round the tractors with the kids. So we're putting that in place this year.
Great stuff. And then where do we head off to?
It's the same route as last year. It's a 40-mile route. We go out of the cattle market up to Kennick Top and down through Legburn, Alvingham, or Manbin and Alvingham and all that, all the way up to Tetney and Hopney Clay, and then back down the A16 through into Louth for the big finale at the end.
Excellent. Now, this is all for charity. What's the charity this year?
It's Cancer Research UK again. We work really well together with them. It's for the Louth Run for Life lot. And we're going to be involved with their Santa Run, which is happening in a couple of weeks in Louth as well. We're going to have a couple of tractors in the marketplace as well with them. It's a fantastic charity, and more people are ending up with cancer. So, you know, it's a charity that's close to home.
Absolutely. Do you know how much you raised last year?
It was well over £10,000 we raised last year. I ain't got the quite figure in front of me, but yeah, we was well over £10,000 last year, and I hope to better that. And, you know, if all the public come to get them buckets out there in the right places, we'll do good again this year.
Great stuff. And as ever, the public can spectate, they can watch the tractors going round the route?
Yes, they can, yeah. I mean, they can watch us depart from Louth to start with, from the cattle market, and they can all, you know, watch us in the villages. We have some people that follow us around, and, you know, they get to the next village before we do, and then they'll come and get another village and watch us go through again. So there's a live tracker on the Facebook page, which also takes you to the donation link as well.
All right, well, let's hope you raise loads of money. As I say, it's a fantastic sight to see. So that's in 2 weeks' time from Louth Cattle Market. Taran Lee, thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Do check the Facebook page, search Louth Christmas Tractor Run for all the details, and they do have spaces for more tractors if you want to take part. I spent a very interesting morning with the CLA last week at one of their Ag Transition workshops at Newark Showground. Some SFI updates and advice coming up in a few minutes. Chatting with CLA Regional Director Kath Crowther at the meeting, following the budget, the CLA is making representations to government and needs farmers' help. Kath, in your presentation, you talked about things having turned a corner over last weekend. What did you mean by that?
I think that there is starting to be a recognition that this is not as simple as 1 year of APR, agricultural property relief claims, that ministers just kept on referring to. You know, what we need is conversations about solutions here. This is people's family, it's their livelihood, it's their lives. They say that they're targeting the wealthy. They are not. They're talking about business assets and agricultural property relief and business property relief, which they keep on ignoring the business property relief, which is very important to farms and estates. APR and BPR were brought in for business continuity. There are business reasons why they are there, and it's not a tax loophole. What we've been saying is that if you think there's a tax loophole for the wealthy to be able to avoid inheritance tax, let's work together to come up with a solution to that. We can work with you as government to make sure that there's a workable solution without unintended consequences to farming businesses. The reduction in the direct payments, the accelerated reduction, is impacting, all of this is impacting confidence in business and that long-term view that rural businesses need to take and always have taken.
Yeah, because I was going to say, the acceleration of the reduction of direct payments seems to have almost gone under the radar a bit. It wasn't part of the main budget speech. But that is going to have a huge impact. You're almost looking at budgeting to receive nothing.
Yeah, you know, some people's payments have gone from tens of thousands of pounds to 7,200 with no indication. Now, we didn't know what the payments were going to be next year, and we always knew that by 2028 that would be zero in terms of direct payments. But it was suggested that that would be on a downward trajectory gradually. And for that to be taken away completely, how do you plan in your cash flow? You know, businesses are needing to plan their cropping, their spraying, everything years in advance. So I've heard from members who are no longer changing the combine they were planning to next year, not re-employing people where they've got a vacancy, now are putting on hold those projects where they've put in grain stores, reservoirs, that sort of thing. And also I've heard from members who have recently made those investments, which would take sometimes years or decades to repay the investment, almost thinking, why did we make that investment? And if it was right now, following the budget, maybe they wouldn't have made that investment.
Now, the budget's not really, or seemingly not subject to any kind of formal consultation, but the CLA is obviously making representations to government. What do you want from members?
We need to hear exactly how your business is impacted. So on the accelerated reduction in direct payments, the CLA is pushing back against that. What we need is to know what your 2024 payment was, what your 25 payment will be, which is a maximum of 7,200. But how is that impacting? What does that mean for your business? Does it mean you're not investing in that reservoir, which means that productivity will reduce? The rural economy could be delivering so much more. Understanding all of the other elements of the budget and what that means to your rural business. That's the farming side, which is essential. Farming is backbone of the rural economy, but the wider rural businesses as well. Steve, you and I have spoken many times about the CLA's Rural Powerhouse campaign, and the government keep on talking about the fact they want to raise £40 billion. Well, that sounds quite familiar to me. We've been talking about the fact that the rural economy could deliver £43 billion if it was brought in line with the rest of the economy. But in order to do that, we need to remove the barriers. We need to ensure that there's a planning system that works for the rural economy. We need to ensure that connectivity, broadband, mobile phone, electricity connection is not holding us back. And so we could be doing an awful lot, but allow for growth, stop limiting businesses. This is not how we grow the economy.
So case studies to go before government rather than just theories or this is what might happen. You want to know from members exactly what the impact of these changes will be. How does a member do that?
Get in touch with the regional office. So call the CLA East office, email us, chat through with us on those things. The other thing is, please get in touch with your MP, in particular if you have a Labour MP. A lot of new MPs come in and they haven't understood rural businesses in the past. They promised to be the party of the countryside and they clearly have not delivered. We need to demonstrate to these new MPs the impact that it's going to have, and they need to stand up against Labour HQ on this because they need to represent their constituents. So if please go to your MPs, write to them, invite them out to your farms and estates and your rural businesses, turn up at surgeries so that they have to talk to you. Tell them your story, but feel free to come and speak to us. We can give you some lines and an explanation of the key messages we want to put across. There's also a lot of information on the CLA website. So under priorities, there's a budget 2024 section, and under that we've got frequently asked questions. We've got a rebuttal document which explains that, you know, the government keep on referring to this £3 million. Well, it's not as simple as that because not everyone has a nuclear family. You know, you have to have a spouse that has an interest in the business. You have to be passing on to a direct descendant. There's many reasons why 3 million doesn't always work. So we've got the information on the website that they can go and look at. And please get in touch. We can help you through that. That's what we're here for, and we will keep fighting.
Thank you, Kath.
Thanks, Steve.
To the fields and crops and flooding now with our crop doctor, Sean Sparling. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. Slattery and slape. I think that sums it up out here now. Another wet old lot this last 7 days, over an inch of rain for me in the last week. But as I said last Sunday, thankfully it's come at the point in the season when most people are drilled up and things are now on the slowdown to Christmas anyway. Soil temperatures well below 5 after the cold of last week. So on every level, and as with the weather at any other time of the year, we've got to let it do what it wants because it's going to do that anyway. On a positive note, 95% or more cereals in the ground this autumn as opposed to about 40% or so this time last year. So from that perspective, and from the perspective of what we have in the ground looking likely to all get to harvest, remember last year we were talking about thousands of acres underwater this time last year, and huge areas of that 40% that was in went on to largely rot in the field. And that's what left the winter cereal area decimated to harvest this year. So we're in a different league of relaxedness as we squelch into December 2024. White rabbits pinching a punch and a flick and a kick and all that. Of course, up here in Lincolnshire, we've got away largely unscathed by the flooding that's come with Storm Bert, but we've been there ourselves far too many times in the last few years, so thoughts and prayers go out to anybody that's been affected, and it's there, but for the grace of God go we. But huge parts of the countryside, towns, cities, villages, once again, widespread flooding. And I'm getting absolutely sick of hearing the same old tat being spouted by government after government, environment minister after environment minister, about how much money and time they're devoting to boosting flood defences and how all these things take time, when not just farmland but homes and businesses are being flooded in towns and cities where things like that were unheard of until just a few years ago. Places that have never been flooded in their history now see this as a far too frequently occurring event. We hear constantly when these floods happen about how the Environment Agency are working tirelessly to monitor and manage the situation. Half a dozen shiny new EA liveried trucks next to a flooded river, where half a dozen or more EA staff in their high-vis jackets are leaning on the fence looking at the water bubbling along. They never seem to be doing anything other than riding about, monitoring the situation as it develops. Personally, I feel that they need to do more. They should be dredging these rivers to stop them flooding by maintaining a river network that, if it weren't silted up to the gunwales, is there to do the job and stop the flooding for us. The fact is that there is a shamelessly willful, ill-informed, ignorant and cynical dismissal of any suggestion of dredging these rivers and block watercourses in the certain areas which now show to be most prone to the flooding. But any suggestion that it's because the rivers are now so silted up that they simply haven't got the capacity to take the water away, a fact that anyone with half a brain can see, alongside of course years of concreting over and building on floodplains and developing land which has always served as floodplains or runoff. But the silted up rivers are clearly the main contributing factor to much, if not all, of the flooding that we see. but it's almost unilaterally being dismissed as an irrelevance by the government, environmentalists and the EA, who totally resist any suggestion that dredging or desilting waterways could or would be beneficial to prevent the devastating flooding of homes, businesses or anyone else. And because of what many people see as the result of decades of neglect of these riverways, the inaction, which is of course paraded by the government as looking after wildlife and of not dredging rivers as being beneficial to the riverbank wildlife, which is incidentally a huge double standard, because apparently it's okay and acceptable to overtop rivers and flood farmland and drown tens of millions of little creatures like mice, voles, shrews, hedgehogs, rabbits, moles, hares, lizards, worms, and the countless billions of bees and other tiny creatures and bacteria that they sacrifice when farmland does get flooded. The river is supposed to be a channel in the ground with the water contained in that channel flowing below the ground. The banks are the displaced soil that results from the action of the river. With the silt levels in these rivers filling the channel to ground level in many cases, those flimsy banks are now having to hold all the water that's riding above the silt. And when water levels and flow levels are such as we see after events like Storm Bert, and this is going to repeat across the country constantly, time after time, and all through this winter once again, because the winter storm season's only just started and we're only just on the letter B. So there's no wonder these riverbanks breach and they overtop. And with the silt and the water levels in the rivers covering the outfalls to ditches, dikes, other watercourses off farms, which incidentally are being maintained to a very high standard, the water's just backing up and backing up, and that makes the problem worse on the land and the upstream villages. That water cannot get away. It's like half filling your bath with sand and wondering why half of the water you normally put in has sloshed over the sides, but instead of taking the sand out of the bath, you build a bund around the bathroom and stop the overspill from flooding into the hall. It's absolutely crackers. You've only got to look at the situation in the Somerset Levels a decade or so ago. They were constantly being inundated in the Somerset Levels as the banks of the River Parrot and River Tone overtopped, and it took months for those floodwaters to subside. And after years of calls of more extensive pumping and dredging to get rid of the floodwaters more quickly, eventually the Environment Agency dredged the River Parrot and the River Tone. The Somerset Rivers authorities now undertake frequent dredging to keep those channels clear, but because of that, the Somerset Levels haven't flooded since 2014. Flood defences are only necessary because the rivers need dredging. I just don't get why the devil they're not doing something to stop the cause of the flooding, like take the sand out of the bath. They don't have to build infrastructure to take the water away. If you dredge and let the rivers carry the water away like they're supposed to, by removing the silt that's filled them up and is stopping them from doing that, then the flooding problem solves itself. I've got no doubt that the real reason they won't dredge is that the bean counters in the Treasury are balking at the potential cost. But tell those of us who've just lost their businesses, whose homes are now underwater and ruined again, and those whose homes and businesses are now both uninhabitable and uninsurable, tell them that it costs too much to stop them from flooding if it rains again. Instead of putting 22 billion quid into the Emperor's New Clothes carbon capture scheme, they should have been dredging the rivers and actually doing something to stop us all from flooding, rather than spending good money after bad on flood defences that don't work anyway, because it's cheaper to ignore the cause rather than admit they're wrong. Anyway, cold and wet enough for curbs. Slugs have moved down the profile in the cold, but don't assume they've gone for the winter just yet. The government have now axed the capital grant schemes as well, by the way. How lovely. How long before the SFI and the IPM options we've all got in the ground are axed to the government that keeps on taking, eh? Let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Cheers, Sean. Back with more same time next week. Coming up, the markets and weather, and where are we and what can we do in respect of the transition away from basic payments. Updates and advice on the way.
The Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
This is the Farming Programme podcast for Sunday the 1st of December 2024. So we heard following the budget that the reduction in direct payments is to be accelerated down to just £7,200 next year. Capital grants are paused. Where are we with the transition? SFI, capital grants, getting advice and help. At last week's CLA Ag Transition Workshop at Newark Showground, I asked those questions of George Hoyes, partner at Ceres Rural, and first the CLA Senior Policy Advisor, Cameron Hughes. Cameron, where are we then on SFI?
We're in a situation where we've had kind of a new version of the scheme every year for the past 3 years, and we're now at a point where the Sustainable Farming Incentive 2023 offer from last year is closed. That had high levels of uptake, lots of people in the scheme. 25,000 odd agreements, and now we've moved on to sort of next iteration of the SFI, which is referred to as the SFI expanded offer. Lots of actions that you can get paid to do. 102, most of them are for 3 years, and the RPA is in the process of scaling that up and letting more applications through.
Where are we with capital grants?
There's a pause on the number of applications that's been received in 2024. There's been massive interest, particularly in terms of the value of applications that were approved in the first 6 months of the year. And of course, we've seen payment rates being reviewed. Most rates went back in 2022, 2023. So my advice would be, if you hadn't submitted an application yet, wait, because you might end up might be a waste of your time. And as I understand it, there are around 3,000 applications sort of sat there waiting to be looked at whilst DEFRA work out whether they can afford to pay the ones that they've said yes to already.
And what sort of things have capital grants been available for?
It's a massive list, over 100 different items. Some of the more popular ones include things like fencing grants, sheep netting in particular has been quite popular this year. You can get grants towards troughs, water pipes, dry stone walls in various parts of the country, gates, I could list more. Some you do require endorsement for catchment sensitive farming. One of the most popular ones this year has been the concrete yard renewal one. RP15 is the code, and that's had a high level of interest according to what we've heard this year.
One thing we know that is time limited is the Future Farming Resilience Fund. That finishes in March next year. That's a little bit different because that's money not for a specific purpose, but for advice.
That's right, yeah. I mean, we're fully supportive of it in that it's there to help those that need the advice navigate these early years of the transition, because lots of businesses have been reliant on direct payments through BPS. And yeah, I think the scheme's been pretty good in terms of levels of take-up. I think they're looking to support 32,000-odd businesses in this current version of the scheme, and they definitely seem confident that they're going to be doing that. So we're just keen to give it that final push before it closes, because there are no plans to reopen it beyond March.
And the CLA is actually one of the organisations offering that advice?
It's not, no. We've been eager to promote it. We've partnered with Ceres here today, Brown & Co. last week, NIAB several weeks ago in the north. So, yeah, we're not running it, but we're eager that our members take advantage of it.
Okay. As far as the transition is concerned, it's important really for any farmer that's either considering going in or is already in or is in one scheme or another to have a sort of transition checklist, isn't it?
I think so. I think a lot of time needs to be spent looking at the detail, and I think I'm sort of like sort of sometimes come back on the sort of it's very complicated criticism, because the flip side of that is that there's a huge number of things that you can get paid to do, or at least significant contributions towards it. So we should be sort of careful about complaining about the complexity, because complexity equals like a long menu of different things you can get paid to do as farmers, land managers. But yeah, I think sort of number one is to sort of see what schemes are out there and what's available for you, and really don't let the tail wag the dog. Members' own business operations need to be sort of the core focus, and it's how these schemes can complement them, rather than going around sort of chasing money that you don't need particularly and might sort of threaten the viability of your own business or have an impact. So that's the kind of message we're hoping to get across.
Important to get advice, as ever, with anything as complicated as this.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the fact that DEFRA's funded some free advice in these early years, we're eager for members to take advantage of it. Obviously, members can approach us for advice on schemes if they have particular questions. But also, sort of, I'd like to sort of encourage members to not think that it's so complicated that, every single person is going to need, huge levels of advice that they'd have to pay for. So I think sort of getting some time allocated to look through the details themselves would be sort of priority number one.
All right, Cameron, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's bring in George Hoyes now, partner at Ceres Rural, who do offer advice on SFI, Ag Transition, Capital Grants, and the Future Farm Resilience Fund. George, let's talk about SFI first from your point of view. It's still very complex, but there have been a few changes to make things a little less complicated.
You now no longer need to do an expression of interest, and you don't need to have been a previous BPS claimant. Therefore, in theory, any farm in the country can look to apply for an SFI 24 agreement. As detailed, there is 102 options that are available at the moment. Generally speaking, when we go out to farm to discuss potential SFI applications, we tend to find we can whittle those 102 options down to about 10 or 15 relevant options to that farm.
Because some of them are capped, aren't they? Others are more open-ended. They've got to really, though, be complementary to the business itself and not letting the sort of SFI tail wag the farming dog.
Yes, definitely agree with that. Yes, there is 10 options that are capped at this 25% limit. Generally speaking, they are the higher paying options, but nevertheless, there are still a few options that are available over a wider area, such as the legume fallow option, or even the enhanced overwinter stubble option. But yes, certainly do carefully consider your farm as it is, and your rotation and what crops work well at the moment, and plan carefully. That's the key. Set up a cropping schedule, plan what you're going to be growing over the next 3 or 4 years, and then try and fit in any of the SFI options that are relevant.
Because you presented a case history which will probably surprise many farmers that it is possible to replace BPS income with SFI.
It certainly is, yep. So I showed an example of a 950 hectare arable farm that has a sheep unit as well. And by making use of various SFI options, including the legume fallow, the herbal lays, hedge options, bits and pieces, we were able to bring up the per hectare payment up to £230 per hectare, so replacing their BPS.
Okay. One thing you also emphasised was the necessity when you're going into an SFI, or even when you're already in an SFI scheme, of keeping evidence, gathering and keeping evidence. Why is that so important?
Yeah, so all the stewardship agreements appear to be moving to a remote inspection basis, or certainly as a general rule of thumb, that seems to be what's happening. I'm a big advocate for farm setting up WhatsApp groups in particular. If you can tie it in with farm owner, farm manager, farm worker, farm spray operator, etc. If they all have access to it, you can use that platform to take photos of any seed invoices, record dates of any operations, and just generally take photos of any good options as you're driving around the farm that you see, so you've got that evidence if required, if an inspection happens.
One thing that did seem to be popular was the boundary restoration options. Do you want to explain what that means?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of interest and uptake of, in particular, the BN11 option, which is planting of new hedgerows, particularly since the 1st of January 23, when the payment rates near enough doubled. Huge interest in it. There is potential for farms to make a bit of money out of planting hedgerows.
What are the next steps if somebody's considering this? Where should they go? Who should they talk to? What should they do next?
Yep, so obviously here at Series Rural, we are farming consultants and agronomists, so we are more than happy to help with any applications or option choices. There is also still the Future Farm Resilience Fund being run. It ends in February 2025, and so please do take advantage of that free farm business advice if you haven't already done so. Even if you yourself have taken advantage of it, it's a very challenging time at the moment in UK agriculture. If you know of any neighbours, friends, family, relatives that are struggling in farming, please do feel free to pass on our name and number. We'll be more than happy to pop out, see them completely free of charge.
That was going to be my next question, that there's got to be something in it for you. So are there fees to be paid for your advice and service?
Through the FFRF project, it is completely free. We have a couple of hours with the farmer, sat down over a cup of tea, generally chatting about stewardships, grants, schemes, etc. We then also often delve into diversifications, succession planning, budgeting, benchmarking, carbon auditing, etc. That is all completely free of charge. We would then be in a position to help with any applications going forward, and it's at that point we would look to charge.
George, thank you very much.
Perfect, thank you.
If you want to get in touch with either George or Cameron, contact details are on cla.org.uk for Cameron, and for George, it's ceresrural.co.uk.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock, and from Louth Market, auctioneer Edward Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. A bit of a festive edition this week, with last Monday was our Christmas prime stock show and sale. prime steers, all in average 343.71 pence per kilo, and prime heifers, all in average 366.64 pence per kilo. The cattle were kindly judged by Matthew Slack of EV Slack and Son of Doncaster. He found his overall champion from Olivia Parkin in a 755 kilo Limousin Cross steer, which sold for 390 pence or £2,944.50 to Richard Taylor of Owen Taylors. The champion native went to Nottingham Consultants Limited of Southwell with a 670 kilo Lincoln Red steer, which sold for 400 pence or £2,680 to Lakins of Louth. Moving on to the sheep, this week we had an SQQ of 318.62 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of £148.36. A magnificent show of lambs in the show and the commercial pens this year for the Fat Stock Show. Champion with a 00 commercials of Eastoft, a pair of Beltex cross lambs weighing 55.5 kilos and selling for an incredible £480 per head, or 865 pence per kilo, and they found a home at Lakings of Louth. First place native pair went to Scrillsby Farms Limited of Horncastle with a pair of Suffolk cross lambs weighing 57.5 kilos and selling to £220 per head. Commercial lambs, an absolute soaring trade in the commercials. A few averages, consignment reports, Scrivelsby Farm sold 16 lambs to average £171.13. Paul and Ian Tuplin of Skegness sold 42 lambs, averaging £164.29, topping at £186. And Steve Booth of Melton Mowbray with 8 lambs, averaging £162.50, topping at £175. We had a charity lamb this year, with the charities are LRSN and St Barnabas Hospice. The lamb was kindly donated by W.R. Hanson, the son of Coningsby. The lamb raised £1,050, and a thank you to D&J Colson, A. Wright and Son, L. Brown and Son, Josh Bustance, Edward Middleton and Eleanor Hopper, Oliver Chapman and Chris Dale. All kindly donated towards that lamb and raising funds for two very good causes. On to the store lambs on the day, an average of £82.11, a very mixed show forward. Top pen went to F. Cosgrove and Son of Haynton at £118. Longer keep lambs, £50 to £80. Cull ewes, an average of £107.85. Top price in the ewes came from Scrillsby Farm Limited of Horncastle, which topped at £220. Skendalby Texel sold to £190, as did C. Allison of Thorsway, again at £190. That concludes this week's market report. Thank you to all our sponsors that have sponsored this year's Christmas Prime Stock Show, and the judges and everybody that has supported. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Edward. Good to see you and so many colleagues and farming friends at the Fat Stock Dinner in Louth on Friday night. Lovely dinner too. To the grain markets, where all is not that great this week. Open Fields, Alice Killam. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Another strange week on the grain markets. Thanksgiving in the US on Thursday, so their market was shut, and nearly everyone there would have been on holiday Friday too. But whilst they've been celebrating, there has been very little to celebrate this side of the pond. We've slipped further with two rotten days of trading. True, it is month end, so there will be some trying to square books before the new month starts, but it's not been pretty. We have been seeing this week the UK losing far more ground versus the French market. The front months are technical, so you'll want to be comparing the May 25 on both boards. Thursday, for example, we saw a stronger pound, but does this really represent a 25 cent fall versus a £3.50 fall difference? The point here is this a fair reflection on the physical values that we should be receiving, or has it got out of kilter? In a normal season, a quick glance at a future screen would give you a delivered value, so yes, I think this has lost its way a little in the last couple of days. I, like most of you, am very frustrated indeed. Globally, the narrative has not changed. The AHDB ran an interesting article this week about the pace of Russian and Ukrainian exports and how this is likely to slow down as the season progresses. Over the last couple of days, we've seen some Algerian tenders and a Tunisian tender, but details are sketchy on both as to the results. With French lower, it's perhaps most likely that this has been filled by the Black Sea, this despite the weaker euro. With a slow US market and tidying up for month end, it is all rather dull and uninspiring, for which I apologise. The UK market is testing the bottom of the line of May 25 at these levels, and the consumer seems to be in no rush to rescue us. Imports or replacement numbers are more expensive than they were, but they're still cheap, and it is against this that our values will be compared. We are going to need something global to scrape us off the bottom of the current range. We do have time, but most of us are mindful that next week is December. Most mills are running slightly behind, and there is a lot to shift before next harvest. Not many of us will be wanting to carry anything over. I'm afraid that we're all searching for this golden bullet which has not yet arrived. For the moment, we're going to have to stick with trying to trade the carry in the market which exists today, gaining premiums wherever possible if the risk involved is deemed sensible, getting in front of the spot market if you want to move wheat or barley in the new year, grabbing any shorts if anything sensible develops, and if we're lucky enough to see a few pounds come back on again, get stuck in with some sales. Some guide prices for this week, circa Friday morning: feed wheat, December, 175 to 185, February, 180 to 190, and May, 185 to 195. Feed barley, December, 145 to 155, February, 150 to 160, May, 155 to 165. All seed rape, January, 400 to 405, March, 405 to 410, and feed beans, February, 215 to 220, and May, 220 to 230. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
The usual autumn mix of wind, rain, cloud and sunny periods this week. We can expect some rain most days, some of it heavy, especially on Tuesday and Friday. Winds are mostly southerly to westerly in the low 20s mph, but gusting into the 40s at times. Mild to start the week, but turning colder, so expect some frosts midweek. Next week on the Farming Programme podcast, we'll hear some good advice from NFU Deputy President David Exwood on what we can do to improve the future in these difficult times. And we'll have a little more on a new gene editing project. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.